For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning. As Aishin said in her introduction, I'm Douglas Floyd. I'm the director at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. I'm very happy to be can you hear me? Yeah? Okay, good. I'm very happy to be here this morning, see faces. This life we're living right now can feel sort of isolating. And even so, I have to say I miss being able to go to Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and see people face to face. It's always nice when the Dharma is shared and passed from person to person. You can sort of feel the warmth of the hands of the other person who's passing it to you. I wanted to call this talk today Getting the Goose Out of the Bottle. That title may not seem like it has anything to do with how we're living now, but I think it does. I wanted to say first, just as an introduction, that I'm feeling very fortunate. I don't work outside of the home where I'm dealing with the public and people who might be infected with coronavirus, and I'm certainly not healthcare provider who's faced with dealing with really the hard job of taking care of sick people and dying people who might infect you. The only members of my family who have had coronavirus, have COVID-19, have had comparatively mild cases, and none of my friends have reached out to say, I'm sick, or anything like that. And, you know, our whole regime of shelter in place and social distancing and wearing masks, washing our hands a lot, is reasonable, and it's not a particularly burdensome regime to have to follow. It makes a lot of sense. It's clearly aimed at protecting us, protecting me, protecting other people from me, since I could be infected and asymptomatic. And given all of that, it's sort of surprising how difficult this seems sometimes. You know, we have ideas about what our life is supposed to be like. And we live inside that box. So here are the things I do, here are the things I don't do, here's how everything is supposed to work. And life is not working the way it's supposed to right now. And it's surprising how much boredom and frustration and low-level anxiety there can be. And just the whole protocol of staying inside as much as possible, not going out unless it's absolutely necessary, washing your hands constantly, wearing a mask when you go out. I mean, when I go out, I feel like I'm wearing a hazmat suit, because until the last couple of days, it's still been fairly cold. And so you're wearing a coat, you're wearing a hat, I'm wearing glasses, I've got a mask on. I'm sort of like, okay, here's me, and the world is on the other side of this portable barrier that I'm wearing. It's almost like, as a nerd reference, I feel like I'm in the Lord of the Rings, and I'm in Helm's Deep, and when I go outside, I'm jumping out into a world full of coronavirus orcs or something like that. There does seem to be a sense of hazard in this whole idea of walking down the street and people dodging each other contributes to that sense of danger. We tend to get wrapped up in it, and it tends to have us get very wrapped up in ourselves, and the sense of hazard to ourselves, and this whole thing becomes all about protecting me and mine, and not so much about taking care of others, that I'm doing this to help take care of others. You know, this is really, it's an extension of how we frequently find ourselves thinking and feeling ordinarily, that we're these individual, I'm this self-contained, autonomous individual, but I have these interactions with the world that out there. And it seems like it sort of exaggerates that degree. What has surprised me in addition is that given the restriction on activity, I've been watching more TV than usual. And I have to confess that I've been spending way too much time watching MSNBC. So I normally, you know, MSNBC is interesting. It's a lot like other news organizations. There are very thoughtful people who provide news and commentary that's very fact-based. News is very well-sourced. They have plenty of well-renowned experts come to talk on there. And then there are other people who, other NBC on-air personalities who seem to be, whose job is to whip up the passions of the viewers. And I think I'm not going to equate the two organizations, but in that sense, they share something in common with Fox. I don't think MSNBC lives in the world of fiction quite as much as Fox does. But they're certainly, they see part of their role as motivating people and stirring up the passions. And what, it's hard not to, start to feel that those people who have those other views, or those people watching other networks, people in a different party, for example, are separate from us, and they're just, you know, how do you respect people who would say or think something like that? You know, it's easy, I don't know that I do, but it's easy not to feel dislike or contempt sometimes, which is very unpleasant way to live. And it's a very, it's very different. It's the kind of approach to the world that Buddhism and Zen are attempting to heal. You know, what we end up having, living in boxes. We live in our Douglas box, and our family box, and our friends box, and the people like me box. Everybody else is out there. And there's that tension. Mm-hmm. We're all independent, and they're out there. You know, Buddhism has taken a very different view of that. That there, we are not distinguishable. We are not separate. We interact. The whole world is a theater of things that interact constantly, and in their functioning, they collectively create the world and create themselves. Who I am depends on the existence and the activity of every other thing in the world. And that's a worldview that is especially emphasized in Huayin Buddhism, which has had a great influence on Zen, and in the writings of the great ancestor, Huayin ancestor, Fazan, from the 7th century. I know everyone is very familiar with this image of Indra's net, the great net that has a jewel at every knot, and each jewel is reflecting the activity of all the other knots. And since each jewel is reflecting what's in the other jewels as well, there's this infinite self-reflection in which each jewel in a way reflects and perhaps contains everything that's going on in the other jewels and the other knots in the net. And there are other images that that the Huayan writings have used to attempt to get the point across of how things are empty in this new different way of everything being mutually dependent and interconnected in this radical way. There's the image of a room with 10 mirrors set up in a circle, or statue of a lion that's made of gold. The one that I like the most is one of Fazang's images of a house, and a house and a wooden roof beam. And he points out that if a house represents the entire universe, and a roof beam represents me or some other thing within it. Who I am, what a roof beam is dependent on being a part of this house and this whole universe. Only because there is a house does a roof beam have any function or identity, any existence. If you were to take the wooden beam out of the house, it wouldn't be a roof beam anymore. It'd be something else, but that would also be a different universe altogether. And that's an important part. That everything in this whole world, in the same way, supports the existence of the roof beam and all the other parts of the house. The whole universe supports the existence. Mutually is involved with the mutual support of all the things, all the parts of the house, all the things in the house. So because there is a house, there's a roof beam, there's roof tiles, there are floors, there are walls, and so on. All those have their function, have their existence only as parts of the house. And in a way, it works the reverse, right? The house only exists of these components of the house. So all of these components working and functioning together in existence and function create a house and support the existence and function of each other. So we exist only in dependence on these other things and their functions. We aren't separable at all. We are identified with them. And you're familiar with this from the song of the precious mirror samadhi, that everything, all things taken as similar, are not the same. They're similar in their emptiness and their contingent, dependent nature. But they're not the same thing. They're not distinguished. They aren't separate, truly separated, but their places are known. So this is a world where there are distinctions, but not divisions, no separation. Zen and Huayan don't say, well, the world is all one Buddha nature, and there's really this thing called Buddha nature that's behind what we see. The whole multiplicity of things. If we really were enlightened, we would see Buddha nature. That's not it. And Zen and Huayan don't see some sort of position in which the differences are resolved. They're still there, but we are joined inextricably and dynamically interacting. So that takes me to what I really wanted to talk about. That is at least the question of how we resolve this problem. If so many of the problems of the world arise from our sense of fundamental separateness from other things, that inherent in trying to separate ourselves from the rest of the world, there's a certain inauthenticity and risk. We live a life of trying to preserve our sense of security, our separateness, looking for validation of our worth because we have isolated our attempt to isolate ourselves in the world. It's a view that is really unstable. It's subject. We see through that all the time in our interactions with things. But how do we deal with that? How do we live in a way that is not, that reflects this view of the world, this world of total interrelatedness, a life of an existence of interrelationship? It's really not a matter of going out to study Huayan philosophy. That's fine. But Buddhism and Zen in particular have never been about just studying philosophy. They've always insisted that you have to enact this world. It's more important to enact this world than to understand this philosophical description of the world. But how do we do that? And that's where I'll just throw out the title of my talk, of getting the goose out of the bottle. That's an old koan, Zen story, about a woman who has a gosling, a baby goose, and she decides that to take care of it, she's going to put it in a bottle. And I assume by a bottle, it's something like a big water cooler bottle or a big demijohn or carboy, something like that. So she gets this little gosling and somehow she sort of shoves it in through the neck of the bottle and he's in there. And he does fine, but he gets bigger and bigger until he's clearly pretty uncomfortable and unhappy, and she decides she needs to get the goose out of the bottle. She wants to get the goose out of the bottle without hurting the goose and without breaking the bottle. So how do you do that? So like other koans, this is really something that we come to understand through Zen practice, through Zazen. It's not something we need to talk about, but I recommend this may be something that you find helpful, both in stepping out of this, our common view of ourselves as this separate, fixed identity, this autonomous being, to understand how better to approach the world. You might remind yourself of this story before sitting down in Zazen, or reminding yourself of this story after you complete a period of Zazen. But at the end of the day, the fundamental practice we have for enacting this truth of our fundamental interrelatedness and dependent life is Zazen. Not having some technique necessarily, but just sitting here and over again, waking up from this self-absorbed, self-awareness where we're wrapped up in ourselves, wrapped up in our thoughts and feelings, and come back to this situation, this moment, over and over again, waking up, waking up, waking up. And in that sense, I have to tell you that just as a hint, that once you get the goose out of the bottle, he gets back in, you have to keep getting the goose out of the bottle over and over and over and over again. But beyond Zazen, in all of Buddhism, and particularly in Soto Zen, our practice is to enact this life of relationship, this life of interdependence, this life of interconnection. And so for right now, I think that what we need to understand is that in this life, in this world, and in this life of interconnection, interfunctionality, interdependence, intercausation, intercreation, everything has ultimate value. Everything, all people, all sentient beings, all things are worthy of acknowledgement, respect, gratitude, compassion, and nurture. Our life in the world needs to be a life of acknowledgement, respect, gratitude, compassion, and nurture. In living in that way, we can't just eliminate our delusion, our deluded thoughts and feelings. Just as another hint, we can't break the bottle. The bottle can't be broken, but we can escape from it through Zazen and through enacting our relationship, our relationships in the world. So we can acknowledge, not that we're separated from other people, but we are relating with them in a different way. We need to continue to protect other people and protect ourselves by sheltering in place, staying at home, going out and wearing masks, maintaining physical distance, washing our hands before we go out and after we come back so that we don't become ill and so that we don't make other people ill. That's also how we would live the rest of our lives. And in doing that, we live a more authentic life, and we can step around, we can diffuse to some extent the anxiety and dukkha that is connected, implicit, in our ordinary way of approaching the world. I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any contributions or questions?
As the host, can people hear me? Okay, as the host, I want to let people know that you can raise your hand by clicking on the reactions icon in the bottom toolbar of your Zoom chat meeting, and you can temporarily unmute yourself to talk by holding down your space bar while you're talking. And aside from that, Douglas, I'll let you question people.
Okay. David, did you have something you wanted to say? David Weiner?
You're asking me?
Yes, you're unmuted. I thought you might have.
Something did happen. It's interesting in your talk. And you said earlier that we were avoiding each other when we're walking down the street. And initially, that's what I was doing. You know, I put on my mask and saw the people and I would avoid them. And then about 10 days ago, I wasn't wearing my mask because I was doing laundry in my apartment building. And I came in contact with somebody else who wasn't wearing a mask, you know, unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And so I've been self-quarantining myself because, you know, I was possibly exposed. And it really changed my mindset. And now my mindset is I don't want to go out because I don't want to expose other people. So instead of protecting myself now it's an issue of how can I protect others? And I find myself in our last Dharma talk that we had last Sunday, I find myself now writing to other people, asking how they are, not so much worried about my own, you know, well-being, but rather looking out how are other people doing and trying to be a support to them. So it's interesting when you said that about dodging other people. I know that's where I was at, you know, in the very beginning.
I think it's easy for us to fall into that.
Yeah.
I think that we catch ourselves doing that and understand, you know, we have a sense, we can get caught up in thinking that there's some way to, that we're separate from the world. We have to maintain that we can really separate ourselves from other people and harm they can cause. It's without, but the real point, and I think the real point of Buddhist thought and Zen is that we can't, we don't separate ourselves from other people. We are fundamentally connected. We have to deal with them in different ways. We have to deal with people skillfully. But we are, we do continue to reach out. I think that's one of the things that we also should do, that during the pandemic, to the extent we can, we reach out to other people and find out how they are, find out how we can help, or just to speak to them for their benefit as well as ours. We are people who, while we have this one side of us, this deluded side that sees ourselves as separate and wants to, you know, sees other people as out there, there are other people, there are other aspects of us that perhaps unconsciously recognize that we are connected, that we live in a connected way, and this attempt to live in separation is a painful, anxious way to live. And it's important to us to reach out to others and live a life with others and with other things. I'm not seeing any other comments.
Douglas, there is a comment in the chat box from Eve saying, sometimes I am overwhelmed by how many people there are to reach out to by phone, email, or Zoom. I have heard from people that they are reaching out to old friends, relatives, etc., that they don't usually talk to. But as I said, sometimes that feels daunting, especially if you are still working.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's another another box we can put ourselves in, that we have to try to live perfectly, and that if it's a good thing to reach out to some people, we've somehow failed and are bad people if we don't reach out to everyone we know. You know, I think we, it's just important to recognize that, that's a trap, and that it's a good thing to reach out to the people we can, and
Can you say more about it being a trap?
Trying to live a life of perfection is a trap. You know, the perfect is the enemy of the good. That really is true. So what we do is to try to live that life of connection, but we are connected whether or not we act on it. So let's act on it, but you can't reach out to everyone you know. No one can do that. But so it's a good thing to reach out as we can and to help when we can.
I think David Ray has raised his hand.
Ah, David.
Yes. Douglas, thank you very much for that talk. So much of it, especially the beginning, it is something I really needed to hear this morning, and it's connected to what's been on my mind last night and this morning. I'm aware of how privileged I am. I mean, I really am in an ivory tower, and my quarantine by myself with my spiritual practices and my online friends and my men's groups and my yoga and so on, and continuing to work online, I'm doing okay. And the thing that you said about MSNBC and Fox, I mean, I'm aware, you know, I claim to have lots of empathy for, you know, for example, people in India for whom social distancing is an impossibility. But I am not, I am aware that I am not full of loving kindness toward people in my own country who have a very different set of political opinions and who have a very different set of experiences and attitudes. And last night, someone that I chat with online from time to time and have never met and lives in a different state said to me, how long is your governor going to keep the sheltering in place order? And I responded to this. I lashed out at this person in a very angry way. And my thought was to block this person. I'm aware now that I'm going to apologize to this person whose experience I don't know much about. But sitting this morning, I was keenly aware of that. I feel that I'm very much still, I always will be, at the stage of trying to learn and understand what this Zen tradition's teaching is about the connection or dialectic between separateness and togetherness, or the many and the one. But I'm really feeling aware this morning of a kind of, you know, sort of insufficientness of my own moral, my own dharma position in regard to the other people in my country toward whom I feel very self-righteous and indignant. And so thank you very much for that talk.
Thank you. I saw a hand up. Who had their hand up?
This is Taigen. Thank you for your talk, Douglas. One way to talk about the question, the issue that David just raised and Douglas did too, is, you know, we are totally interconnected, and this pandemic kind of, you know, we're all in it together. Everybody in the world is either sheltering in place or not able to shelter in place, or helping out as a health worker or whatever, delivery person. But then what David just raised is the limitation of what we can do. So I feel, you know, very concerned about people, you know, people in India who are in terrible shape now, but people also in Chicago in distress. And, you know, as David said, I recognize my own privilege. I'm safely sheltered in place and in reasonably good shape. But I'm aware that there is so much real distress going on. And so, but the other side of that is that there's only so much, you know, that we have limitations. We have limitations in terms of how we see others, as David was talking about, or we have limitations in what we can do to be helpful. And I'm old enough that I should not be going out and helping, but, you know, there are. So just to mention this, I'll try and put this out, get this out on the website with Mike's help, but I'm aware of several links of places for people in Chicago, the places that one can help support, who are doing good work to help people in distress. But we each have this a limited view, as David Ray was saying. We each have our own particular limitations. So the point of universal in particular, to put it that way, that we're all totally interconnected, and yet we each have very specific limitations in terms of what we can do and in our own limited perspective. And so we have to accept that. And they're not separate. So I see now all these different, I've got this what is it called? Gallery view, and I can see all these boxes and all these, and a lot of faces and names and other boxes. And so here we all are, and yet we're each in our separate little box. It's a perfect metaphor for that we're together and we're limited both. And so how do we accept that and work, do what we can to be helpful to others and to ourselves, and not going out as a way of protecting others. So it's this is the dilemma we're all caught in. And anyway, I just appreciate that there are all these people here. And some of you from, I know there's at least one person from New York City and one person from Kansas City. And I don't know, there's some people I don't know. Is anybody else from outside Illinois? Okay. Well, anyway, we're all in this together, and part of that is each of us has our particular limitations. So, just to say that in response to David Ray, thank you,
Douglas. I wanted to jump in. Also, I don't seem to be able to raise my hand, but I, you know, I've been feeling this feeling of overwhelm long before COVID. All of the issues, the many, many issues that press for our attention and that deserve our attention, you know, whether it's climate change or immigration or homelessness or racism, I mean, just to name maybe the top four that are kind of pressing there all the time. And I think what has helped for me is to reflect on the concept of Dharma position, that we each have our own particular position. And while we're all a jewel on Indra's net and we're all reflecting, you know, every other jewel in the net, we have, you know, a limited range of what we can do. And so there may be people on this call who can act in a way, in a particular sphere, that who can act directly in a way that I can't. And just coming to accept that's part of the interdependence and interconnection, is that we cannot personally do every single thing or take on every single issue. We have to really deeply reflect on where our sphere of influence is and what our, you know, energy level is and our capacity, and to try to use our influence where we can and, you know, just maintain awareness and forgiveness of ourselves when we cannot.
Yeah, I think those are very good points. And we act skillfully. We do what we can do in our Dharma position within our own capacity.
And maybe also as we relax with that, we will discover that there are things that we had previously overlooked that we can do, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's just reaching out to someone one-on-one or something. But I think it really requires us to bring that mind that we cultivate in Zazen of calm and compassion to the situation.
Yeah.
Can I?
Eve, please.
I think I put in the chat box, you know, regarding the comments about MSNBC and just listening to people who agree with you. There's a lot of efforts around bridging those divides that started before the coronavirus, but have taken the opportunity to do more online you know, since the coronavirus. And I mentioned the chat box. I had some contact with Braver Angels that used to be Better Angels, and because I had gone to some of their workshops, but you know, frankly, I was uncomfortable with their conversation guide. And then I found this other group, Living Room Conversations, and I did participate with them this past week, and I like their approach. And then my friend Dan Wolk, who's involved in, he just recently got involved in Citizens University, which is another attempt to build civic discourse. And he told me about this website, the Bridge Alliance, that lists like 36 groups that are, you know, working on, wow, on bridging divides. And yeah, you know, on the one hand, that does make me feel like I can do something. On the other hand, you know, like I said, it can feel overwhelming. That there is a lot. I mean, because of the internet, there is a lot of connections that you can make virtually. And I mean, it was interesting to me, like when I initiated a conversation with the Better Angels people and our Braver Angels now. Anyway, they did respond. I mean, they were, you know, up to the point where I like sent them back the conversation guide after I corrected it. I mean, look, I knew that. I haven't heard from them since then, but you know, I knew that might happen. But then, like I said, I found out about the other group. But yeah, but I guess it's sometimes, I mean, I really appreciate the wisdom of acknowledging your limitations, and for me, I guess, you know, trying to prioritize what it is I really want to do.
Yeah, and I think that there's, we have to be skillful in how we address certain situations. So I think reaching out to people with different political views can be a reaching out and acknowledging the connection, making the connection without necessarily trying to convince them of the error of their ways, which...
Yeah, well, that's what, like, if you look at the Living Room Conversations website, that's basically what they say. And the way they framed everything is that, you know, they try to set up conversations so that people do listen, you know, more than, and drop the trying to convince thing. And I mean, the interesting thing to me is that, yeah, I mean, Braver Angels, on the other hand, I mean, they said that, but then the way they set things up tended to solidify the divides, I felt like, more than bridge them. Mm-hmm. But I guess, you know, partly because we are in our own little boxes now, but people are using Zoom. I mean, it's interesting in that I think there are some opportunities for listening that weren't there before. Or they're more strongly now. And I think it is encouraging to see that some people are taking advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't heard of those. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, well, like the one I was in last week, or Wednesday, I think it was. So they set up the conversation so people talked about where they were getting their sources of information about the coronavirus. And as somebody who works with people in public health, it was really interesting for me to hear it and to hear, you know, some people talking about conspiracy theories and stuff that I've only heard more like third or fourth hand. And there, you know, there was some considerable range in where people were coming from, even though I think people more on the blue end of the spectrum tend to be drawn to these kind of conversations. They've worked hard to try to get a broader spectrum. And so like there were two people from, you know, Utah that were participating. And so that was helpful. So at least, you know, I mean, the geography does tend to correlate with some other things. So, yeah, anyway, it's, I guess I find it, that's one positive side of all this, I think, that maybe those efforts are being made a little easier.
Yeah. Kathy.
Thank you for your talk, Douglas. I really enjoyed that. And this, and in your comments and resources too, Eve, I was just thinking about the internal aspect of this, you know, and that in this situation where we're on our own and we're listening to the news or not, that when it gets stirred up, you know, when sometimes when, you know, you see things that are so inflammatory, that are stressful on the news, you know, I think that can be a time when it's easier to go, how could anybody think that, you know, and kind of move into a more me versus them or us versus them attitude. And that I have had to limit the amount that I am exposed to the news. But also, you know, I think for me, when I am calm and when I see the central issues that affect all of us, when I am out in the world and I kind of see everybody's impacted in the same way, or just calming down to take a walk and watch the blooms that are coming out, those are things that allow me to sink in and be tune into what are the issues that affect all of us in a more inclusive way. And so, you know, some of this is managing the stress and anxiety that I think gets stirred up for each of us in this process. And that we're more polarizing, I think, when we are more stressed. So I just wanted to make that comment. And thank you for your talk.
Thank you. It's getting pretty late. Maybe we should have one more comment or question before we close.
This isn't the final one more, but just to say to everybody, please take care of yourself. Please be well. Please help others by taking care of yourself and help others when you can do that. And it's good to have us all here. But I'll add what Douglas said. Does anybody else who hasn't spoken have some comment or question or something to share, please?
If I could say a word, are you hearing me now, Ms. Brian?
Yes, you're very clear.
I've always been aware of how there are seem to be a lot more more extroverts than introverts in our society, and how much emphasis there has been in the media on ways to connect. And I loved your talk. And I also am aware of how I go back and forth between needing to connect and wanting to connect with people that you know, so that we can feel all that we've been talking about in terms of and enact the interrelationships between that and what is a very intense kind of session opportunity, in a sense, in terms of there's no escape. The heightened sense of awareness about my thought habits and other kinds of habits that go on, and I have a heightened sense of how I distract myself. And I've been spending more time just looking out the window or questioning why do I need to watch a video now, or this is what my brain is doing once again. It's much more heightened when all of those options of external activity are reduced so dramatically as they have been. And I'm wanting to use that opportunity to let myself be myself and let the situation be itself by paying more attention to it. And yet at the same time, feeling the pull to, outside of that to connect and to be part of the world around me and to be helpful. And I'm just aware of that back and forth, in a sense.
I just have one technical question that anybody could answer. Someone told me there's a way you can save everything. It's in the chat box. So when we leave the session, it won't be gone.
The three little dots. You see the three little dots at the lower right-hand corner of the chat screen? Yeah. If you click on there, you can save the chat.
Okay. Thank you very much, Eve.
Are there any more comments before I cease recording and we'll move into the chant for today? Okay, Tygen, you're muted.
Sorry, Jason has his hand up too, but just in terms of announcements, just for everyone, you can look at the website and see our schedule of Zoom events, which include morning Zazen Monday through Friday, and Thursday evening there's discussion also. So just to mention that, and thank you all very much. So Jason had his hand up.
Jason.
Mute.
Can everyone hear me just fine?
Yes. Cool.
I've actually never read or heard this Goose Koan. Which collection is it in, if it's in a standard collection?
It's not in one of the big three. I'm not sure where it is. It's the story is, it's expanded a little bit. It's about, I forget, what is it? And I only know it in Japanese form. So it's about Nanchuan, so Nansen in Japanese, and one of his students, I think named Riso, comes to visit and says, well, I don't understand this story. How do you get the goose out of the bottle? And Nansen claps his hands and goes, Riso! And says, yes! And says, goose is out of the bottle. That's the whole koan.
That's good. I didn't know if maybe they had a bunch of like butter that they had to put on the jar and slip the goose out.
Yeah. Well, only if you roast the goose in the bottle. But I think that's harming the goose. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you.